Next step, number 79, December 10th, 2009. Okay, get your shoes on. Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to, well, looking at life and inspecting the very fabric of our being, but all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the Initiative's mission and is brought to you exclusively by the good folks, the cool folks, over at the Apostles' Net. Apostolic evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. It is so... Excuse me. Keep running. Yes, keep running. It is so good to have you with us as we kick off the fourth season of our podcast. Yes. Yes, thank you. Today we've got a great, great program. We've got a lot of stuff. We're going to be looking at the 10 most fascinating people of the past year, 2009. I'm sure you have some fascinating people that you're thinking about. And we're going to get the official word, you know, from where? From Barbara Walters. And we're going to see how that fits in with all of the things that we do over here. Hey, before I forget, let me just welcome all the newcomers. I heard we had another surge of new listeners. So if this is the first step you're taking with us, or the second step, welcome aboard. This is a fun little podcast. What we do over here is we talk about, well, life in general, but we view it through a very primitive and ancient form of Christianity, which is known as Armenian Orthodoxy. I call it Armadoxy, because I don't want to confuse it with, you know, with churches, with structures, with institutions, but a pure look at the faith as Jesus commanded his disciples, as Thaddeus and Bartholomew brought over to Armenia. And there in Armenia, it remained for almost 2,000 years unaltered. In other words, a lot of things happened over there, but the basic formula of love, of caring, of forgiveness was there. So we've tapped into that, and we bring that. We look at life, all the factors of life, through this very, very ancient and very unique lens, the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. So welcome aboard, and all of you who've been, well, walking with us, running with us, jogging with us, you've been with us for a while, welcome back. I'm glad the path led you back over here. And, you know, we've got a great podcast today because all the things that I just said we're going to talk about. On top of that, we're going to look at the Jesus wish list. Yes, you know that Jesus wants something for Christmas. I mean, after all, it's his birthday, right? Shouldn't he get a chance to want something for Christmas? Well, hidden among all the stuff that you've heard about Christianity. Yes, literally hidden is his wish list, his shopping list. Like if he had a chance to say what he'd like for his birthday, it's there. And we're going to be looking at that list in just a few minutes, and it will blow your mind. You're going to say, wow, I never knew that list was there, and I better run out to Costco. Well, you're close, okay? If it's not Costco, if it's not Walmart's, well, you're going to be just surprised where you can go to fill Jesus' wish list. But before that, you know, I just got back from I don't know how these things, I don't want to say it's a mind blower, I don't want to say it's a depressing thing, but I had to go and sit where I was going to give some testimony at a murder trial that took place in Glendale, and unfortunately one of our young girls was killed a year and a half ago, and today was actually the sentencing, and you just see the system working, and it's a very, very, frustrating, disappointing system that you have to really sift through. And it gets you to think about a lot of things. Of course, this morning we heard on my way to this murder trial, I was thinking about what I was going to say in front of the court and how this one girl's death has really influenced and impact so many people beyond just the family, but an entire community, a neighborhood has been impacted. And then I went ahead and I thought about the wars that we're in today and how, well, it's not just one person, it's communities, it's entire areas that are devastated, and each of those lives impacts how many more. And you could just imagine the devastation that some of these large communities that are impacted by war, by genocide, have to go through. And then sure enough, this morning I had the news on my way to the courtroom, and I'm hearing that President Obama was in Norway and he was accepting the Nobel Peace Prize. And of course, most of his message was apologetic and talking about how he was justifying that he had to send 30,000 more troops out to Afghanistan. And so you have a sitting wartime president receiving a Nobel Peace Prize. It's kind of ironic. It's actually, it's kind of bizarre if you think about it. I mean, let's not fool ourselves. You're talking about peace, and at the same time, you're talking about killing and wars. And interestingly enough, President Obama says that war is sometimes necessary and justifiable. And that's the point that got me this morning. It really got me, because here I was seeing that a senseless, brutal act. I was going to a murder trial where a senseless, brutal act upon another human being had impacted so many people. And is it really necessary? Is it really necessary that conflicts have to be resolved by force? Is there another means? And certainly Jesus had given us a tool of communication, a tool of loving and forgiving. Can we talk in those terms? Can we get to those terms? And, you know, that's what this Christmas season is all about. We're going to be looking at really the Jesus gift, what Jesus wants. And you'll be surprised, because in that formula we find answers to some of the most basic questions of human responsibility, of human love, of human communications, and basically getting along in this world to make this life a beautiful life. You know, we start off every podcast with a song, and I think, tell you the truth, I need a song right now after what I've been through this morning, as I'm sure many of you do. Let's dig. I'm sorry for laughing. I'm trying to get around this transition right now. We're digging deep into Orthodoxy right now. We're going to go from the Blind Boys Christmas album. I need this. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive the King. Let every heart prepare Him room. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing.
Nature sing.
Neville joining the Blind Boys of Alabama on their album, Christmas album, of course. It's called Go Tell It on the Mountain. And like I told you, I needed that. I needed a kickstart. I just love that song, Joy to the World. It talks about reconciliation. And I need to be reconciled with all of these, well, all of life that's really just hitting me, like, from all sides. And I'm sure you're in the same boat. If you're living anywhere in the civilized world where you're seeing so much being, well, hit on us. We're being bombarded with news of different caliber, different magnitude, just hitting us, and you have to process that. You know, this is one of the, it's a mixed blessing, let's say. It's the blessing of the internet that you could basically have news whenever you want, 24/7. You've got access to the world. You've got access to just every corner, nook and cranny of the world. But at the same time, you need to be able to process all of that because it is an information overload. And so when you hear about wars and you hear about famine and you hear about genocide, and then in the next breath you hear somebody talk about the score of the latest football game or the latest basketball game or soccer game that's coming up, and you have to put it in perspective that, you know, there are people dying on one side and the other time, and in the other area they're sitting around eating junk food watching athletes make millions and millions of dollars. You have to kind of put this in perspective and reconcile it. Let heaven and nature sing, repeat the sounding joy. Well, what is the joy? The joy is that we are reconciled, that reconciliation exists now, that there is an opportunity to reconcile, toward reconciliation. And of course, we're talking about God and humanity and God and humankind, but it was a struggle for me, as I said a few minutes ago, this morning, as I'm listening to these terms of war. You're hearing a president talk about war, and at the same time, they're giving him a peace prize. They're giving him the Nobel Peace Prize, the highest honor on earth, I guess, created by a man who made his fortune selling dynamite. Yes, did you know that? The Nobel Peace Prize, the Mr. Nobel, the way he got rich and the way he made all those millions of dollars that he's now giving away is he made it by inventing dynamite. So this explosive, and obviously, yes, there are good uses to dynamite. You know, they've cleared off mountains, they've destroyed our... Oh, don't get me started on this. But there are definitely some probably good uses for dynamite as well as just everything else, right? There's good uses and bad uses of everything. But it's ironic, right? Dynamite, this destruction, is now leading to this Nobel Peace Prize. And in that same spirit of irony, I present to you, here's a sitting president receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, and he has just a week ago committed 30,000 troops to Afghanistan to go and fight some people who will kill. And as he said it so eloquently, much more eloquently than any of us can, he said it eloquently, there will be people who will go out there and kill, and there will be people who will be killed. And you have to wonder, when you talk about these terms, you have to, as a human being, as somebody with a conscience, as somebody who has a care for other human beings, you have to wonder at some point, you know, how do we reconcile all of this? How do we reconcile a situation like this? How do we reconcile war? Obama this morning in his speech said, sometimes war is necessary and justifiable. Do you think it is? Jesus says, he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. Now, check that out. He who lives by the sword, it's basically an axiom, isn't it? It's just an obvious truth, isn't it? If you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. He's not saying don't pick up the sword. He did in the garden. He turned to his disciples and says, put away your swords, because he who lives by the sword will die by it. In his own defense, he didn't want that sword being picked up. Now, as Christians, where do we stand? Are there cases where you need to have a war, where conflicts cannot be resolved any other way, that you have to resort to violence? And I guess this was my biggest hang-up this morning, because I was going to a murder trial where the victim was murdered because at some point between her and this man in the relationship process, the conflict could not be resolved. And so this guy resorted to violence, abuse, and killed another human being. And so at what point do you say that, okay, I've exhausted all of the possibilities? And we see that once you allow it for one instance, you then have to open the doors for other instances. And herein is the big challenge for us as Christians. Can we attain peace through violence? In other words, everybody who says, let's have peace in the world, is basing that peace, basing the formula on a system of violence, of going out there and basically blowing them to hell so that they can't do more violence to us. Isn't that the strategy of war, right? You go and you kill them so they can't kill you first. And at some point you need to say, okay, what does that lead to? It leads to more and more wars. So can we adopt the Jesus principle? Can we adopt a very basic understanding of loving and caring and forgiveness? Well, it's tough. It is really tough. Because when you see people who hurt other people, your first reaction is to resort to violence. So can you take the higher road? In the same speech, President Obama referred to the detention camps in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. And he said that we had to close them down. Why? Because we have to show ourselves better than others. I mean, we have to live that higher standard. And that's very commendable, but can we use that higher standard in other ways in resolving the problems and conflicts that we have? Last Monday night, the Stop Genocide Now people, Gabriel Starring in particular, they had an event and I was one of the speakers. And we had a chance to look at some of the films that were coming out, the videos that are coming out of Darfur. And here, Darfur is really on earth. It is an ongoing genocide right now. And it speaks to me very, very closely because my grandparents were genocide survivors. And unfortunately, the world turned its back to that genocide in 1915. And so I need to be committed today to not making the same mistake that the rest of the world made. In other words, today I have to try to reach that higher standard. I have to live that higher standard by not turning my head to what's going on in Darfur. And one of the speakers Monday night, Paul Friedman, who had done Sands and Sorrow a few years ago, he had directed that movie, produced or directed that movie, just an incredible film that's available just about everywhere. I highly recommend you see that film. It's about what's going on in Darfur. But he made this point Monday night that really shook me up. He said, I made that film 4 years ago, and shame on us that we're sitting here 4 years later in this world and we're still talking about a genocide taking place in Darfur. And you have to think about all of this. I mean, when I tell you that this has been a really rough week, I mean, you've got murder cases, you've got murder on the grand scale of Darfur, of genocide, you've got wars, you've got announcements of war. And all of this happening, and you've got to be able to, well, like I said, it's information overload, unless you can process it. Can you now filter it down? Can you bring it down to the very basic elements of what is necessary? That's what your faith needs to do. And faith does do that, doesn't it? Because it tells us that at the bottom line is we're talking about love. And so with all of this hate and evil out there in the world, that love has to begin somewhere, right? Well, it begins with you and me. It can't begin anywhere else. Repeat the sounding joy, right? That little baby in the manger, where is that manger? You think it's in Jerusalem? You think it's in Palestine? You think it's in Bethlehem? Where is that manger? It's sitting right in your heart. It's not out there. That's what Armenian Orthodoxy is about. Not making the mistake of thinking you have a 2,000-year-old religion. You have a religion of faith that begins from the beginning of all time. When God said, let there be light,
And there was all of a sudden this bang of life throughout the entire universe. And that's where you come from. You were there. Your every molecule, I mean, science tells us that, right? Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. Everything from the beginning of time is the same everything that we have right now. You were there. We were all there. We were all part of that. And Jesus, as creator, Jesus, as the Christ, sitting there, looks at us and says that I am the way, the truth, and the life. Not as this individual alone, but as this incarnation of love. When you talk about Jesus as love, then everything else makes sense, doesn't it? Because love is the way, the truth, and the life. Love is the only way. Right? People say Jesus is the only way. Well, it's a very simple equation. If you believe that Jesus is love incarnate, there's no problem there, is there? Love is the only way. And it is that ultimate reconciliation. It is the one force that will bring about peace. It is the one force that will make peace a reality. Whether you're creating dynamite and giving out Nobel Peace Prizes, you've reconciled that. Or whether you're sitting in a courtroom and looking at a murderer and the family of a victim, it creates a reconciliation. Or whether you're looking out at people in this world. Information overload. And bringing it down, sifting it down through a funnel and realizing that love brings everybody together. Now, I did promise you a few minutes ago that we're going to be talking about the Jesus gift. That's coming up. I'm going to tell you exactly what Jesus wants for Christmas. Yes, it's a list. He's given it to us. But at the same time, I want you to think about what I just said. Keep it in mind, because we do want that reconciliation. We want that hope. We want to say joy to the world, but we don't want it to be just another few words that we've put together. Last night, interestingly enough, there was this show, and I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I hate to admit that I even watched this show. It was a waste of an hour of my life, but I had to because the hype on it was so much. They were going to tell us the 10 most fascinating people of 2009. Oh! Now, what did we just talk about? We talked about world-changing, I mean, huge, monumental events, right? We're talking about genocide. We're talking about a president who's turned his back on genocide. We're talking about dynamite and Nobel Peace Prizes. We're talking about wars and people getting killed. We're talking about murders on the grand scale. Well, the 10 most fascinating people, according to Barbara Walters. Here we go. Lady Gaga. Woohoo! Lady Gaga. And here's a good one, right? And they ask her, Barbara Walters just straight out asks her, have you had sex with women? This is like the ultimate question, right? The ultimate question in a world that is really looking for something, for some answers. This is the question of Lady Gaga. Governor Sanford. Okay, this is the governor that had a soulmate in Argentina. Tyler Perry. Actually, that one little segment was kind of good. John and Kate and 8. Okay, now this was in a group, fascinating people. John and Kate plus 8. And now it's Kate plus 8. And so, Glenn Beck, conservative shock jock, calling Obama administration fascist. He's fascinating. Adam Lambert, you know, claim to fame? This is the guy in American Idol. Okay? Lewd conduct and basically people going wild for him. Okay? Brett Favre, football player, multimillionaire. Sarah Palin, going rogue. She lost an election, but she's going rogue, and she's a superstar. Now, Barbara Walters says we cannot give an award to a dead person. That's not in our policy, so we're going to give it to Michael Jackson's 3 children. Okay, fascinating. Yes, that definitely qualifies in the category. And the 10th one is the most fascinating. Now I want you to listen to this. They pick out Michelle Obama is the most fascinating individual of 2009, rightly so. And she starts talking about the health of children as being something that she wants to prioritize and make it a priority during the Obama administration. She, as a first lady, wants to do this. And Barbara Walters then turns around and says, can we talk about your arms? Your arms. Why are they so shapely? And Michelle Obama, it's interesting. She looks at her and says, why do you want to talk about my arms? I mean, she just now talked about health issues that are plaguing a country, and we're talking about arms. Who's sleeping with who? How much money are people making? And this obsession is really the ultimate drug that we are being fed. We are being fed this drug that these things matter. You see, and because we're doing that, we're forgetting that the big issues are out there, and they require you and I to get involved. They require you and I to open our hearts. They require you and I to be the setting for the manger. So like I said, I wasted an hour, but my heart went out because I know people waste days, waste lifetimes being consumed with really trivial, idiotic matters. These people make millions of dollars at your expense, at your and my expense. They live these lives out there that are make-believe, and somehow they draw us into it. There's a fascination with the absurd. Now, the real absurd is all around us. It's that reconciliation of things that don't make sense, right? The dynamite and the Nobel Prize. It's that absurdness that we try to reconcile and can only be reconciled when we plug ourselves into it. Armenian Orthodoxy, is that absurdity defined? Is that absurdity answered? Because here it is. Ready? Here's the ultimate absurdity. Armenians living on the crossroads between East and West in a small little patch of land called Armenia. You know, it's right there between Europe and Asia. If you're living in Armenia, you technically don't know whether to call yourself, you know, European or Asian. Well, it's right there. Every barbarian, every Mongol, everybody has gone through there and has devastated the land, has raped and pillaged the people, the countryside, and everything. And yet, here we are, Armenians, still living there and still able to create. Like no one else has. If you've listened to Armenian music, if you've seen Armenian art, if you've heard an Armenian prayer, you understand that potential is there. And that potential is being realized. So what is the secret? What is the secret? Why is it that when you go into an Armenian church and attend the Divine Liturgy, the one word that is repeated over and over and over and over again is Chagarutyun Amenetsun? Peace unto all. It's wild, isn't it? Here's a group of people that have never known peace, and what do they talk about? What do they preach? That's the absurdity. They preach peace. Now, is that peace attainable? Well, I'm here to tell you that through Armenian Orthodoxy, we have a pipeline to the beginning of time, to that time when we understood that love is that creative energy. And you can do more by spreading love, by being forgiven, by being able to reach out and extend yourself to others than you can with all of the dynamite, with all of the weaponry, and starting to sound like Elmer Fudd there for a minute, with all the weaponry and all the devastating devices that mankind has ever thought of. We can bring about peace. Not by killing, not by destroying, not by maiming. We can bring about peace by taking the first actions, by bringing peace into our lives, by making love the centerpiece of our life. Susie's got a little announcement to make, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to continue on this and give you the wish list by Jesus. Susie, are you there?
Kóðsjún hef parra banu tjúna sem kist eðast vats og nú tjálnjöf kóha banu
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing, I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a happy Advent season, looking ahead toward Christmas. I also want to take this moment to thank you for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations, which make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step with Father Vazgen provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We look forward to your continued support, and as a way of saying thank you to you, our listeners, during this Christmas season, we'd like to send you the critically acclaimed Spirit album by Gor Mkhitaryan. For a tax-deductible donation of any amount, you'll receive this album which has touched the hearts and souls of a new generation. Please visit our website, inhisshoes.org, and press on the Donate button. Or send a check to the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stalker Street, Glendale, California, 91202. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. In this season of Advent, may we take encouragement from Christ and remember that God is always with us. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and I hope our listeners will take advantage of not only that offer, but actually ordering the Spirit album. Just a beautiful album, and I highly recommend it. It is just great to give out as a Christmas gift because it really brings the Christmas message, the new Orthodoxy, into the lives of people. Well, the people that you love and the people you care to get this message. So check it out. You can find it on our website, inhisshoes.org, as well as many, many different ways to get involved in our ministry and participate. And by the way, today's podcast is being sponsored by Pomegranate and I. That's EYE, Pomegranate and I. They specialize in handmade silver pomegranate pendants and IB jewelry. Let me just say it like this. I'm not going to do justice by talking about it. You need to get out there to their website and check it out. But basically, each silver pomegranate is handcrafted, unique, and signed. It's a mini work of art. Now, the pomegranate has been prevalent in Armenian art, a symbol of abundance and prosperity. I mean, is that like something to start off, kick off the new year with, or what, right? Abundance and prosperity. Each of the bracelets at Pomegranate and I has a little mini pomegranate bead charm, and this is a wish to the wearer for an abundance of all of life's blessings. So if you're looking for that unique gift, that one-of-a-kind gift for Christmas or any time, visit their online shop at pomegranateandi.etsy.com. They're always updating their site with new items, so check them out frequently. Pomegranateandi.etsy.com. We'll have a link on it on our website directly to them. Just press on it. You'll be taken, transported immediately, without hesitation, to Pomegranate and I. You know, hearing Gore's song just now, it reminded me that last week I was asked to be one of the judges on the Armenian Music Awards. And this was a new experience for me. I was very honored to be asked to do that. But it also gave me a chance to really hear some of the greatest talents that we have. And I don't know if I impressed upon you
a few minutes ago how incredible or how bizarre and absurd that is, that this kind of creative energy flows out of that little area called Armenia. I mean, you've got to hear this new generation of music coming out of there, this new generation of creativity. Why, even this sponsor, Pomegranate and I, you look at the type of new art that's coming out, expressions of life, of abundance. This is from a people that have been killed, massacred, maimed, raped, and still live, and still have the drive to continue. Remarkable, isn't it? I mean, this is a group of people that have also gone through the last 70 years of communism, and they've been oppressed, and they've seen all kinds of difficulties, all kinds of physical hardships they've endured, and yet they find the energy to create. Well, what's the energy? Why do they keep saying, talk about peace? Because they are tapped into something very, very primitive, something from the beginning of time, that energy to love. And so when I had a chance to listen to all this music, it was very moving for me, to realize that, you know, just 90 years ago, I remember one of the Turk, this is documented, one of the Turkish ministers in the Ottoman Empire said that there will be only one Armenian left, and that Armenian will be in a museum somewhere. So people can look at him and say that that was an Armenian. And here, 90 years later, not only are we not in a museum, we are creating and establishing new life. You talk about resurrection. You talk about the fulfillment of Christianity. There it is. Now, can we all plug into that same formula? And that formula has nothing to do with the land over there. It has to do with the faith of that land. It has to do with that Christian experience to love, to be able to forgive, to be able to open our hearts to the possibilities that God has placed inside of us. And that opportunity is for each and every one of us.
I think I saw old Santa through my window Christmas Eve. My eyes were really droopy, but I really do believe it must have been old Santa, 'cause I saw his big red hat. And I know my mom and dad can't buy like that. Oh no,
now from there, we're going to look at the Jesus wish list. I did tease you with this, didn't I? Jesus gives us a wish list for his birthday. I mean, it only makes sense, right? Christmas is his birthday. Christmas is Jesus' birthday. Let's admit that, right? I mean, despite everything you say, despite all the happy holiday wishes and all the nice little cards that you give that have snowmen on them and snowflakes, we all know. Christmas is Jesus' birthday. Okay, now, wouldn't it make sense that if you go to any birthday, you would give the person a gift that would be appropriate to the person, right? I mean, if the person is a car enthusiast, you might want to get him like a nice leather little wallet for the keys, or maybe some cushions for the car. If the person enjoys, let's say, cooking, you might get him or her a set of cooking utensils or cookbooks, and you get the idea. I mean, I don't need to go through all the different examples. You're going to get something that is appropriate to the person. Well, wouldn't it make sense that on Jesus' birthday, we would give him something appropriate for his birthday, right? I mean, it's logical, right? So where do we find out? How do we find out what Jesus wants for his birthday? Well, we start with the season of Advent, and we are in the season of Advent. It prepares us for the birth of Christ. And this Sunday's Bible passage came to us from the Gospel of Luke, wherein he tells us what he wants for Christmas. Jesus, in no uncertain terms, talks about a banquet and what should be done at that banquet. He says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they will invite you back, and so you will be repaid. Oh, boy. Now, this is a dilemma, isn't it, right? Because we know we have these Christmas parties. You have the office party. You know, don't you pick names? Or sometimes they put a limit on it. You can only buy up to $20 just so you're not embarrassing somebody else. So you don't walk in with the keys to a car and the other one gives you a Tinker Toy, right? Do you even know what Tinker Toys are? Okay, small little gift. In other words, we want to make it all equal, the balance, right? So Jesus is saying, do not do something for someone else who can pay you back. So there goes all of our normal Christmas gift giving, isn't it? That's problematic. And he says, do not invite your rich neighbors. Now, I hate that part because really, it would be so nice to invite my rich neighbors, you know? If I had rich neighbors, of course. I just keep thinking about it, you know, like invite rich neighbors and they come with a gift. And you open up the gift and it's just tons and tons of cash. Okay, back to reality. Okay, this is not going to happen. Keep repeating, this is not going to happen. Maybe Jesus knows that. That's why he keeps saying that. Do not invite your rich neighbors. He says it because he doesn't want us to expect something in return. That's why he says it. Now, verse 13, he says, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. This here, what I present to you, is, in my estimation, the Jesus wish list. When you do good, don't expect something in return. Don't do a tit for a tat. Don't go out there giving a gift expecting something in return. In fact, give a gift that no one has the possibility of returning. Give it to someone that cannot repay that gift. And the reason why he says this, because Jesus was the original gift giver. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Did we have, or do we have, a way of paying that back? How can we possibly give something back in return for that gift? What are you going to do? Jesus has everything. If he doesn't, he could create everything, right? What gift are you going to give him? We have no way of repaying him, except this way. What he says in this formula, pay it to someone else. Do it to someone else who has no possibility of repaying you. Give it to the maimed, to the poor, the lame, the blind people, people who have all but been forgotten by our society. Because you see, God could have forgotten us, but he didn't. He could have just said, okay, I'm done, I've had it. Here's a group of people that will not be obedient to my law, to my prophets. They've killed them. Instead, God gives us this ultimate chance to be reconciled with him, to be able to find full communion and love with him through Jesus Christ, our Savior. And in the same way, he's asking each and every one of us to give to others who have no possibility or potential to pay us back. If you're looking for that perfect gift to give someone, go out there and give of yourself. Give from your pocketbook. Give money. Give toys. Give food. Give of yourself to someone who has absolutely no way to give back to you. This month, our In His Shoes ministry, it's one of the big let's say busiest months that we have, December. What we do is we organize, and I'm saying this because In His Shoes to me is the exemplification of this principle. Walking in the shoes of others, we understand, we gain respect for other people, and it becomes easier for us to follow this command. And so this month, what we've done is we've organized blanket drives where we get blankets, and these are not just blankets you can buy. Each of them has to be handmade. So we challenge people to actually sew blankets, to knit them, to crochet them, and we pass them out to the children that are in cancer wards, people who have no way of paying back. We take food out to the homeless that we do every month. We have a regular program of reaching out to the homeless because Christmas is not just in December. It's not in January. It's not in February. It's all year long. And finally, the toy drive. This year, we've designated the shelter kids to receive the toys. These are kids that have been battered. These are kids that have watched their mothers be battered. And they are in the shelters with their mothers. And they've seen all kinds of domestic violence. And they will be waking up Christmas morning to the joy of these toys that we pass out. Kids that have absolutely no way of paying back. But you know what? They will be given the same command that you and I were given. In other words, we cannot pay back God except by one way, by doing unto others. And so these children will receive that lesson, that sometime in their life, they will be asked to do unto others. And so what happens? Well, what I was saying earlier, Jesus now is born in each and every one of our lives. Jesus is now in that manger, not in Jerusalem, not in Bethlehem, but in the manger that is our heart. And there he begins a new life for you and for you, me and for the entire world, an opportunity to be reconciled. You see how it works? It's just beautiful. And that's what Christmas is about. That's the magic of Christmas that we enjoy. That's the reason we play all these Christmas carols. This is the reason why we sit around and we give gifts, because the greatest gift giver gave us the example. Giving without anything, without any expectation in return. Well, that familiar sound of the harp, and the harpist coming in, bringing in that beautiful instrument, can only mean that Ani is not too far behind. There she is. Ani, it's been a little bit rough for us over here today. Got something? Okay, yes, that sounds really good. Okay. Here's Ani. Señorita Ani.
Today's spiritual bubble. An American businessman was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish and asked how long it took to catch them. The Mexican replied, "Only a little while, señor." The American then asked, "Well, why didn't you stay out longer and catch more fish?" The Mexican said he had had enough to support his family's immediate needs. The American then asked, "But what do you do with the rest of your time?" The Mexican fisherman said, "I sleep late, I fish a little, I play with my children, take siesta with my wife, Maria, stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life, señor." The American scoffed, "I am a Harvard MBA and I can help you. You should spend more time fishing and with the proceeds, buy a bigger boat. With the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats, and eventually you'd have your own fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you would sell directly to the processor, eventually opening your own cannery. You could control the product, processing, and distribution. You would need to leave this small coastal fishing village and move to Mexico City, eventually LA, and then New York, where you would run your expanding enterprise." The Mexican fisherman asked, "But, señor, how long will this take?" To which the American replied, "About 15 to 20 years." "But then what, señor?" The American laughed and said, "Well, that's the best part. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO and sell your company stock to the public, become very rich. You would make millions." "Millions, señor? Then what?" The American said, "Then you would retire. You'd move to a small coastal fishing village where you would sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take siesta with your wife, stroll to the village in the evenings where you could sip wine and play your guitar with all of your amigos." "You mean, having a Harvard MBA, you have to go through all of that to finally get where I am today, señor?" This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven. Thank you.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you, Ani. I loved it. I loved it. It was just perfect. You hit it right on the head. And what a beautiful way to bring an end to today's podcast. Hey, listen, we had quite a bit of stuff to talk through today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was educational and spiritually fulfilling. I want to remind you that we're on the internet at inhisshoes.org, where you could see all of the programs that we have going on right now. And also the voice of In His Shoes is at apostle.net. That's apostle, like the apostles, you know, but with an E, because it's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So check them out. It's apostle.net. They're the good folks over there who put all of this stuff together, and I'm just very thankful for them, because we have, of course, this podcast. We have the archives, which are every podcast that have ever been done from the beginning of the next step. Well, let's just say from the beginning of time. And now we've got these broadcasts. Every Wednesday evening, we go live from Glendale. And no matter where you are on this planet, you can tune in. You can be a participant in that Questions in Faith series. So it's a really wonderful and dynamic ministry that's growing. And of course, it needs your help. We do have the Spirit album for all the donors this month. We want to get you plugged in with that. And if there's some special people who really want to make a difference this Christmas, we would be glad to hear from you. Please drop me a line. You could drop it directly to me, or just send it to feedback@apostle.net. And every one of your emails gets read and it gets sent. You know what? Honestly, I do see every one of your emails and I appreciate it. I'm humbled. I'm humbled with the expressions that you send to me. Know that every one of them is read. Your special requests for prayers are always, always brought up to the holy altar on Sunday mornings. And I do include all of your requests in the divine liturgy. So be certain of the fact that we are together. We are united in a faith and in the love that God has placed in our hearts. Let me just ask you one last favor. Please mark down on your calendars January 16th through 18th. That's our annual Martin Luther King weekend. We're going to be dedicating it to the work of Cesar Chavez. It takes place up in the Santa Barbara area at a beautiful camp up that way. And it is just about an hour's drive from LA. So if you fly into the Los Angeles area, we will take care of shuttling you to the campsite. That is for the Martin Luther King weekend. It is our 7th or our 8th annual weekend. It is just a great retreat. Gives you a chance to really wind down and to hear some great speakers, some great commentaries, of course, led by the In His Shoes ministry team, but most importantly, gives us a chance to reflect on the loving kindness of our Lord Jesus Christ, on the ability to take that kindness and to transfer it into all aspects of our life, so that we find that love and peace become the real victors in our life. For all the wonderful people who made today's podcast a reality, for Susie, our producer, tireless Susie, and for Ken up in the booth, mean Ken, I want to say. I don't know why you don't do that to me. Yes, I will say mean Ken to you today. And of course, for Ani with her bubbles, just beautiful bubbles. This is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take it.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.